Good morning, everybody. This is the Mattress Boy, yours truly, Jared B., welcoming you to our very first morning drive. 15 to 20 minute quick dish on the news stories of the day, whatever's on my mind, because I know you're all hungry for my thoughts. As always, we're brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Crazy J's Mattress Outlet, located at 784 East Main Street, Cobleskill, New York, for over 10 years. Crazy J has been serving up incredible factory direct discounts on mattresses, bed sets, frames, you name it, to get you sleeping right and putting money back in your pocket. No sales, no nothing, just everyday low prices, home of the $99 queen mattress. You're looking at Crazy J's Mattress Outlet, East Main Street, Cobleskill, or visit us online. CrazyJ's, J-A-Y-S, mattress.com. All right, now, the first thing I want to get to today, the biggest story of the evening that I missed, I slept through it, I went to bed early, Clippers-Rockets, that incredible, incredible NBA feud. Now, apparently, NBA Twitter, which is one of the best corners of the internet, was on fire last night with this feud, fight, ongoing confrontation between the Chris Paul-led Houston Rockets, they were without James Harden last night, and his former team, the LA Clippers, who were apparently led by Blake Griffin, but ultimately Austin Rivers ended up being the GOAT out of that group. Not sure how that happened, but if you haven't seen it, check it out. Just search it on ESPN's newsfeed or something like that. Somebody somewhere is going to repost the video for you. Essentially, Blake Griffin comes down the court, gets in a fight with Mike D'Antoni, coach of the Houston Rockets, and his players take a little bit of offense to it. D'Antoni's players, that is, and start jawing back and forth. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin get into it a little bit. There's a little bit of chippiness between Trevor Ariza and Blake Griffin. Down the stretch, there are a couple blown calls. The referees did a terrible job managing that game from what I saw. What I saw in all the replays, that is. Again, didn't watch it live, slept like a baby, was in bed before midnight last night, you know, getting that 8 hours, being the sleep king and all. It's important. Spend a third of your life in bed, ladies and gentlemen. Real chippy, got out of hand. The refs didn't do a great job slowing the pace of that game down. And ultimately, there were some words said after the fact, once the whistle had blown. Rockets lost by about 10, you know. In a situation like that, I'm of the mind, you take your L, you get out of town. You're in an unfriendly arena. The fans in LA probably already hate Chris Paul, and if they don't, good on them for being loyal to their superstar, but you got no friends in the building. There's nobody who has your back. And after the game, the Rockets players, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, attempted an infiltration of the home Clippers locker room in order to find Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin. Now, this is a little bit unheard of. Little conspiracy theory action going on here, that Chris Paul, with his foreknowledge of the ins and outs of the Staples Center in LA, was trying to lead a group of covert operatives from the Houston Rockets locker room through some back hallways, back channels, secret tunnels to get to Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin. Now, if these rumors are true, and they are, I believe they've been confirmed, that's a pretty cool story. That's pretty funny. Pretty fucking hilarious. And NBA Twitter had a ball with it. And I wish I had stayed awake for all of that, actually. But I didn't. I missed it. And if you haven't seen it, go check it out. Some pretty fun viral content there for you, ladies and gentlemen, to start your day. And now, for a very hard pivot, one thing that has been on my mind that's a little bit more relevant to my business listeners, as the first episode in this podcast, I just want to say right now that politics is not something I want to get into here. In my previous life, I was a political blogger, etc. and so forth. Excuse me, I have to sneeze. No, I don't. Okay. In a previous life, political blogger, etc. and so forth. I don't want to get into that here too much. But the world of business and the world of politics are inherently intertwined, particularly when legislation passes, like the recent tax bill. Now, I'm going to get a little bit more into that after the break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. I know that break was probably non-existent for you, but it was a little bit longer for me. Now, about the tax bill, about the intersection of business and politics. Recently, the current administration, the current Republican Congress passed... passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was designed to lower the American corporate tax rate and bring business back to America. Now, to kind of recap for those who are not as well versed in the inner workings of tax and business, lowering the corporate tax rate is, in theory, supposed to generate interest in businesses bringing their cash, their liquid capital, their assets back onto American soil, back into America, primarily directed at American companies, but it's also used to spur foreign investment in America by remaining lower than competing countries. You know, if the American tax rate is lower than that of Canada, then a business overseas in Japan may be more interested in bringing their investment, their tax-based dollars into the United States rather than going to Canada or something like that. It's supposed to make America more competitive on the world stage, supposed to enhance investment by a business back into itself in the form of increased wages, more hiring, expansion, investment back into real estate assets, business assets, etc. and so forth. Essentially, tax cuts are a central proponent of trickle-down economics, which is sort of championed by conservative thinkers, economists on the right, who believe that when the rich have the flexibility to spend as they wish, when corporations have a little bit more incentive to spend their money freely, they will invest back into themselves, invest back into their businesses, etc. and so forth. And the theory goes that that spending, that increased activity on the part of the rich and on the part of big business, is good for all Americans. Creates jobs, leads to enhanced economic activity, the stock market goes up, as we've seen, etc. and so forth. Now, on the left, the comeback therein is that there is no incentive necessarily for businesses to enhance their own investment in themselves. There's no reason why, with a massive tax break, a multi-billion dollar company would rather hire somebody, increase wages, dish out end of your bonuses, whatever, when they can just increase dividends, pay off shareholders, and create stock wealth that ultimately is funneled directly up to the largest shareholders, typically the owners of a corporation, those with vested investment interests, such as the board of directors, whoever, essentially the largest investors in the pond. And I believe the figure, I'd have to go back and read it, is something like, you know, the top 4% of rich Americans own something like 80% of the stock market, something insane like that. And the theory goes on the left that trickle-down economics like that ultimately just line the coffers of people who are already rich rather than seeing an actual trickle-down effect that enhances the lives of everyday workers. Now, at the center of this controversy right now is Walmart. Walmart, which announced, I believe, at the tail end of last week that they were going to increase their minimum wage for every worker at Walmart and hand out some significant holiday bonuses, end-of-year bonuses, to a number of employees, which many would agree is a good thing. Most on the left and the right would argue that increased wages, which have been recessed in the United States since, you know, the late 70s, enhanced wages, greater investment in the people on the ground at Walmart is always a good thing, no matter who you are. But hand in hand with that, Walmart Stores Inc. announced that they would be closing some 53 Sam's Clubs locations, which, and I've read figures, will impact anywhere between 7,500 and 11,000 employees, laying them off, or essentially removing their jobs. Walmart has said that those layoffs are to reduce redundancy in their portfolios, to increase profitability, and to ultimately generate a better bottom line for the parent company. Now, essentially Walmart closing those stores and raising those wages are offsetting factors in their growth decisions. On the one hand, they're increasing investment in their laborers, they're raising wages, good across the board. On the other hand, they're cutting jobs. They say that they're going to, again, put those laborers back to work whose jobs are being lost in this transition in new localized distribution centers. They're going to replace them within the existing organization into new stores, etc. and so forth. And that ultimately the move will not harm many or as many jobs as are being reported. Now, on the left, people see this move by Walmart as slimy. They see this as a greed corporation, essentially taking the tax cut windfall and pocketing it for themselves, hoarding it. Now, again, I don't want this podcast to be political. I don't want to get into political commentary. But I would urge most people to think about this in a more linear direction. If Walmart is a greedy, slimy corporation that is only interested in lining its pockets, does it not make sense that if these Sam's Clubs were profitable, they would have kept them open? If a business is seeing profit out of its interests, why close down those interests? It doesn't make sense to Walmart because, again, if those locations are profitable, that's all just surplus money. There's no reason for them to close those to, what, save employee wages if they were making more money than was offset by those wages in the first place. Now, one comparable story in my industry, the mattress and sleep industry, which I read about every day, is from a company called Mattress Firm, based in Houston. Mattress Firm is owned by a South African holding company called Steinhoff. Mattress Firm in fiscal 2016 lost $200 million. This year, they have announced a goal to close some 200 stores, which are redundant. They overlap in markets. They are not profitable. Mattress Firm is not getting the sort of attention that Walmart is, and for very obvious reasons. They're not the same size. They're not a multi-billion dollar organization like Walmart is, but these are American jobs. These are localized stores that will impact certain neighborhoods, etc. and so forth. And they're not getting this kind of attention. Probably because most people never heard of them, which is fair. But like Walmart, I argue that Mattress Firm's decision makes sense. They need to do whatever they can to increase their profits so they can remain in business. The alternative to Walmart closing those stores is keeping unprofitable or redundant locations open. All of a sudden, they're reducing their own market impact, their own market capitalization, and running, say, a budget deficit. Like a good country, a good city, a company needs to pay attention to its bottom line, how much it comes in, how much it puts out in terms of revenues, which you can think of as, you know, a tax, etc. and so forth. If Walmart operates under a deficit, they will go out of business. And then that 7,500 to 11,000 jobs that are impacted becomes several dozen thousand that are impacted across the country, across the world. Now, some may argue that Walmart closing is a good thing. Now, I don't want to debate those merits either, but I will say there are very legitimate reasons to criticize Walmart and other big box retailers. They do operate under some shady auspices. Their practices towards unions, towards overseas labor, have been detrimental in many communities. But this line of reasoning is not one that I necessarily think liberals have thought through all the way. If Walmart is to be required to keep unprofitable locations open, to keep redundant locations open, how are they ever going to stay in business long enough to continue hiring practices, to continue raising wages, etc. and so forth? Now, some may say they only raised wages to stay in favor with the current administration. I can't comment on that. I don't know what Walmart's CEOs and board members are thinking in their wage decisions. But I will say that these kinds of changes, particularly from a business standpoint, need to be investigated by the general public with a more discerning eye. That the focus on the bottom line is relatively good for companies like Walmart and are not necessarily detrimental. I guess what I'm saying is, before you jump on the bandwagon of calling Walmart an evil corporation for these layoffs, perhaps investigate where those Sam's Club locations they're closing are, how many jobs are actually going to be impacted, before we take those headline-generated numbers, which just happen to include everybody who works for those certain locations, look into where they're being moved. Look into rehiring on the part of Walmart in the growth and creation of distribution centers. Look into the profitability, the profitability of those stores, and try and understand why business is making a decision like that. If Walmart is solely greedy and solely in the business of increasing their bottom line so that they can pay out shareholders enormous dividends or bonuses to their CEOs and upper management, why would they close a profitable location that they see a return on every single year? Those are just my two cents on that matter, and I hope you all take those two cents straight to the bank. That's all I got for today. Those are the only quick things I wanted to talk about this morning. I'll be back either sometime tonight, sometime tomorrow morning. Who knows? I'm going to play it by ear, and I hope you will too. Thank you for joining me. This is the Mattress Boy podcast, right here on Anchor FM. Stay classy, San Diego. No, that can't be my sign-off. I need a better sign-off than that. Stay classy, San Diego is probably trademarked. What can I say? Good night, world. Good night, moon. Good night, something. I am a mattress salesman, so I should probably tie it back into sleep somehow. I don't know. I'll think on it. I'll sleep on it. Right? I'll sleep on it. This is the Mattress Boy, signing off.